Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Buddy, we got a great one today. You know, for a change, Randy Weingarten, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, joins me to talk about her new book, Why Fascists Fear Teachers, Public Education and the Future of Democracy. Now, I don't know about you, but I always loved my teachers, especially my elementary school teachers. I remember every one of them. My fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Moline, just passed a couple weeks ago. At the age of 91, Mrs. Moline grew up on a farm in Minnesota, one of 17 children. Now, Mrs. Moline didn't have any children of her own, but she treated all of us as if we were all her kids. And when I ran for the Senate in Minnesota, I got a letter from Mrs. Moline saying, if you were the Alan Franken, who was my fourth grade student at Cedar Manor, you were a very good student. And she sent me a $25 contribution for my campaign. And, of course, I remembered Mrs. Moline as one of my favorite teachers. So I called her up and invited her to one of my campaign events. Well, we picked up from there, and I asked her if she would do a commercial for the campaign. So here's Mrs. Moline doing my first campaign ad back in 2007.
So I read about this man running for U.S. Senate, and I thought, that's the Alan Franken I taught in St. Louis Park.
I got this letter from Mrs. Moline. She wanted to help with the campaign, so I asked her to be in a TV ad.
A TV ad? Okay, here we go. Alan was a hard worker, and he went on to graduate from Harvard. He was funny, too. I guess that's why he became a comedian.
I was really more of a satirist.
Okay, Alan. You see, he's also written 6 books and hosted a radio show on public policy. He's been married to Franny for 32 years, and they have 2 grown kids. And you know, he's visited our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan 4 times. In the Senate, he'll work to make college affordable, fight for universal health care, and end the war in Iraq.
Thanks, Mrs. Moline.
You're welcome, Alan.
I'm Al Lynn Franken, and I approve this message because I'm serious about fighting for Minnesota families.
Well, we got a great response from the ad, and my campaign got all kinds of letters from her former students. I remember one from a former student saying that Mrs. Moline stayed after school with her and helped her with a painting, and that she never forgot it. So today, as the school year is beginning, we're going to discuss education with Randy Weingarten as it faces a president who wants to eliminate the Department of Education. It's a great one, you know, for a change. You went to law school, right?
Yes, I went to law school, and then I taught at Clara Barton High School in Brooklyn, New York.
What grade did you teach?
11th and 12th.
Okay, so you're teaching high school.
Yeah, social studies.
Mm-hmm. So what made you decide to leave law, go to teaching, and then become a union rep?
So I had a very odd, career path. I went to law school wanting to change the world, and I really wanted to do labor law. But the labor side law firms really weren't hiring. So I went to a Wall Street law firm that did work in terms of labor. Now, why did I want to do labor law? I went to the School of Labor Relations at Cornell before that. because I, you know, my mother was on strike for 6 weeks during the 70s. I just watched what it meant to have some power.
What did she do? She went on strike. What did she do?
She was a school teacher.
Okay, I see.
Sorry,
okay,
she was a school teacher. She was, and in New York, strikes were illegal, which meant that you lost 2 days' pay for every day you didn't work. So you can imagine what happened in our family. But in my own district, I watched, you know, my favorite teachers being fired because of budget cuts. And so there was just something about this notion of how do you create power for people that don't have power? And I thought that education as well as labor was a way of doing it. And, you know, I was idealistic and I wanted to save the world. And so I really wanted to be a labor lawyer. One thing led to the other, and I worked with the teachers union in New York City. And then when Sandy Feldman became the president of the union, she said, do you want to come in and be counsel to the union? I'm like, yes, I'd much rather do that. And then I really thought, you can't really understand what people do unless you actually take the time, energy, and effort to do it. And so I wanted to teach. And I taught at Clara Barton High School. And I taught for 6 or 7 years, full-time and part-time, as I was the counsel to the teachers union in New York City.
You're doing both at the same time. Okay, you've written a new book, Why Fascists Fear Teachers, Public Education and the Future of Democracy. Why did you decide to write that book now?
For two reasons. Let me be clear. I've done this little spoiler alert. I actually don't call any particular person, I don't label any particular person a fascist, because what I didn't want to happen is the whole conversation about the book to be, is he or isn't
he? Okay, sure.
But what has been clear to me over the course of the last decade, with increasing velocity now, that this demonization of teachers, this smearing of teachers, this demonization of public education, it's not random. It's pretty intentional. And so when you have somebody like a Mike Pompeo call somebody like me the most dangerous person in the world.
Right. Now, when did he say that? He was Secretary of State.
November 2022.
Okay.
But before that, when you have this constant barrage of negativity about teachers, particularly when teachers are really doing the most important work that helps kids have a future, I really wanted to figure out what was going on here. Was this intentional? Was this about destroying one of society's basic pillars? Or was it about test scores? And when you see somebody like Chris Rufo basically say, the way we get universal vouchers, the way we get total fragmentation of schooling is to create universal public school distrust. When you have people like Putin say wars are won by teachers, you see that this is a contrived plan over many years to actually undermine the foundation stone of our economy and of our opportunity of our futures, which is public education.
If wars are won by teachers, that's a compliment.
And then it's a compliment and a veiled threat about the nature of how important education is. I wrote the book to try to figure out why they were doing this. And I wrote the book to actually be a love letter to teachers, because teachers, so why do fascists fear teachers? They fear critical thinking. They fear us, you know, which is what the founders wanted public schools for. The founders understood, the framers of the Constitution understood that in the absence of education, you create the conditions for tyranny and you create the conditions for kings and for tyrants.
Madison and Washington and all these founders.
Madison, Washington, Jefferson, you know, they weren't great about everything, you know that, but they really believed and understood that the way in which you fight tyrants, just like Putin understood, is that you create the conditions for you know, broad-based education. So I wrote it to figure this out. Is it a contrived plan? Yes. Is there a fear of what we do? Yes. Is there a fear of knowledge? Yes. Is there a fear of pluralism? Yes. And, you know, as Rufo said, they will be ruthless and brutal if they have to.
Now, one of the first things that Trump did was say he was going to get rid of the Department of Education. What does that say about his attitude toward education? And what does that mean? What does it mean for the country that they're doing this?
So what it says is he doesn't care about the future. That's what it really says. I mean, the Department of Education has a very limited role in terms of education in America anyway. It doesn't run any school districts. It doesn't run any schools. It's actually Department of Defense, or now I guess it's called the Department of War, that runs some schools in America. They run the schools that are on military bases. But the Department of Education doesn't run anything, any schools.
But it determines policy and it determines the financing of schools.
Well, when you say you want to get rid of education, the Department of Education, what you're saying is you want to get rid of the civil rights of kids. And what you're saying is that you want to get rid of the money mm-hmm. that we fought so hard for to level the playing field to create opportunity for all kids. So that's why I'm saying it says that you don't really care about the future of all kids. I don't even think he cares about the kids of parents who voted for him, because all this funding, the funding that he's been cutting, you know, that his budget cuts about $5 billion of Title I, that money disproportionately goes to kids in Mississippi. It goes to kids in states that have voted for him.
Let's talk about what Title I funding is. My mother-in-law is a teacher, and she taught in a Title I school. Title I school is basically a school that has a high proportion of low-income right. students. You know, it gives money, right?
So basically, all the things that the education department does, it falls into two categories. One, protects the civil rights of individuals. And number two, it gives money to school districts directly for kids that have been historically left behind, like kids with special needs, kids who are poor, kids in rural areas. And then the second piece of this money umbrella is that things that are priorities of the country, like career tech ed, had become a priority of the country in the end of Obama's term, the first term of Trump, Biden's term. There's been an increasing amount of funding that's gone to try to create career pathways starting from high school and community college so that kids had options beyond college, that they could work as a welder, they could work in healthcare without having to opt for a college diploma.
I mean, European countries do a lot more career
training. Germany and Switzerland do a whole lot more, and it is a national priority, and it should be a national priority here. 40% of kids who graduate from high school don't go to college right now. We should have lots of different career options for kids so that they can make, you know, choices starting from high school. But even more than that, what we've learned is that the skill set that you develop if you're in career tech ed, it's experiential learning. It is problem solving. It is critical thinking. It is working in relationships with a group of people. It's communicating. These are ways that we're actually helping kids develop the skills and knowledge they need to be successful in today's environment. And the other thing we have to do, in the last 10 years, we're really competing with the devices.
You're holding up a phone.
I'm holding up a phone. Up my phone. Sorry. We're competing with those devices.
Now, should phones be in school?
No.
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 Right.
You're going to have computers in schools because of the way in which they're used, but they're relied on. Phones and computers and devices are relied on far too much, says me, who is addicted to it. We spend too much time on it.
Teachers use computers, those kids' computers, as tools to keep track of what the kids are doing and as a teaching tool.
Yes,
in the classroom.
It's the irony is, and Jonathan Haidt says this a lot, the guy who wrote Anxious Generation, if you look at big tech and the fact that so many people in big tech do not let their own kids use computers very much, we have to get back to figuring out how we look at each other, how we talk to each other. And too often we hide in our devices. And I think long-term, it's not good for kids. It's not just about the bullying. It's not just about the algorithms. It's also about long-term attention and problem solving, critical thinking and reading.
How are we treating testing now? Has it changed over since No Child Left Behind?
Yes.
Are we doing growth instead of proficiency, that kind of measurement, I hope?
Essentially right now, it got to be super, super, super measured. So it went from No Child Left Behind to Race to the Top. Then President Obama realized that there was too much of a fixation on the algorithm and too much of a fixation on test scores. And so there's been much less of a fixation on high-stakes standardized tests, but they're still more important than virtually anything else in schooling. And so part of what we've been pushing is let's actually try to do things that are more performance-based. Let's try to do debates. Let's try to do project-based instruction. Let's try to have a goal in a class as opposed to a test in a class, where kids can actually engage
with each other.
You know, what you see in private schools.
That's what I think employers want. They want people who can work in teams.
Correct.
And I think people, so AI, is AI going to have a huge effect on education?
Yes.
Tell me how.
So what's happening with AI is it is, in my judgment, as transformational as the printing press, for good and for bad. Meaning, I really wish that we would have gotten some baseline regulation, particularly on issues of privacy and safety, before AI had gotten to the point that it's gotten to right now. And that's a big government fail.
What's the issue there? Help me understand that.
What's the issue?
On AI and privacy.
Data, personal data, whether it's kids' data, whether it's like take what Doge just did in terms of Social Security. Elon Musk and his Doge team had access to people's Social Security numbers and their private information. Elon Musk and his Doge team put that data into AI to be used in God only knows what purposes. And so we're concerned about making sure that student data remains private. We're concerned that making sure that teacher data remains private. And the second thing is we're concerned about disinformation and misinformation and things like that. And those are the hazards. On the plus side, you know, you could actually see, and teachers are actually, because we started this National Institute in terms of AI. We're working with some of the big tech companies in doing it. We're trying to train teachers about it because we want teachers to have real information about AI. We want them to have a facility with it. But what teachers are showing us is that there are not just go to ChatGPT to write the first draft of a lesson plan. You can actually see how AI, like in Pennsylvania, AI is helping social workers and guidance counselors actually do some paperwork so that they've freed up time for them to do, you know, more social work services.
Let's just talk about kids' home, kids' work and essays and stuff like that. I mean, if kids are using AI to write their papers, right?
Well, some kids are.
Well, a lot of kids are, I would think. And do you go to a thing where kids are going to have to write essays in the classroom with pencil like we used to?
You mean go back to the blue books?
Yeah, go back to the blue books.
I think for tests, yes. I think that for tests or for some work, yes. And there are lots of people who are worried about plagiarism and worried about that. I frankly worry less about this, that what I worry about, and we've seen some research on this, if you're just basically taking from ChatGPT, like say you're supposed to do a essay for college, And you're basically taking ChatGPT and cutting and pasting, and that's your essay.
Right.
How are you thinking? How are you actually doing the assignment? How are you problem solving? How are you communicating? That's the danger to attention. That's the danger to critical thinking. So we want teachers to know enough to be able to recognize what is and what isn't happening. That's why project-based instruction or experiential learning is so important, because you can actually create with a project that people are working together on teams where they are critically thinking, where they're trying to start, with it from the beginning to the middle to the end. Critical thinking is the most important thing we do to help kids learn. The second most important thing we do is how to create a safe and welcoming environment where kids are seen and they have agency and they feel engaged and they feel empowered.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Can I ask you about the financing of schools? I mean, how we finance public schools in this country. How much of it is property taxes and how much of it is from the government and how much is from state government?
It's basically 40-40-10. 40% local. And this is a gross generalization. So my apologies, because there are basically like 16,000 school districts in the country. But it's basically 40%. Is locally derived revenue. A lot of that is property taxes. 40% is state and 10% is federal.
That's the way we do it in this country. And that's just the reality. So if you live in an affluent community, people vote on, a funding initiative and they vote for it and they can make sure their kids' school is well funded. In less, affluent cities or districts, that's not the case. Is that how other countries do it?
If you're talking about what is normally viewed as first world countries, no. If you're talking about Europe, just like in COVID, education was far more of a priority in many European countries than it was in America. So first, education is a countrywide responsibility in most European countries, in the EU, in Great Britain. It is funded through whatever the state and federal tax system is in that country. But in lots of other countries in the world, we say education is important, but it is not so important. And the UN has tried to do things to make it more important. But, for years and years and years in so many places in the world, education was the province of the rich and the powerful. And everyone else was left behind. And so there has been a real push internationally through the UN, through UNICEF, through UNESCO to try to make that different. But the United States was one of the few countries in the world that believed in universal, broad-based opportunity in terms of education.
It just seems still, though, that in our country, we do have wide disparities in the financing of school districts.
We have wide disparities in our country in everything. And I give Lyndon Johnson, frankly, a lot of credit. And I talk about him in the book, not as president so much, but as school teacher,
He adopted these Hispanic students, basically, when he was, what part of his career was he in? Was he this before politics?
This was before politics. He was a young teacher who became a principal in the whole country. And he saw what happened in terms of the abject poverty. And that is, we talk about Title I, that actually was the roots of why we had Title I as part of the civil rights laws in the 60s, because of how do you start leveling the playing field for poor kids. The, you know, IDEA, the money for kids with disabilities and the money for kids who are poor, those funding formulas go directly to schools for direct services for children.
Let's talk about teachers' unions in states like, let's talk about what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. In the 2010 election, right, the Republicans, this was Obama gotten in, passed the ACA. There is a reaction to the ACA because people were demonizing it. And Wisconsin elected Republicans and Scott Walker became governor and he went after the teachers unions. Right.
Scott Walker, Ron DeSantis. I'll go back to, let me do first principles here. There are really, and you know this as well as I do, there are really three ways that regular folks have any kind of power. One is through education, and that may be personal in terms of, you know, as you have enough of education to be able to navigate the world. One is voting to try to get people into office that are going to do what you want or need them to do. And the third is to have some economic power. And most mere mortals have economic power, not individually, but through a union.
This is why one of the reasons in your book why the, you say they fear teachers is because they're unionized.
Correct.
How many members do you have?
1.8 million. We are now the fastest growing union in the AFL-CIO.
Okay. So this is why fascists fear teachers. Is because you're organized.
Well, because we have a little bit of power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have the power that Elon Musk has. We don't have the billions of dollars. But this is why they fear. And so what did Scott Walker do? He went right after teacher unions. Our union, we were in the midst of a union organizing drive. We had just organized most of the college campuses of the University of Wisconsin. He took away the right to organize so that people lost the right to actually even engage with their bosses. He minimized the right to collectively bargain. You saw basically salaries go down in Wisconsin. And then the next thing he did was he cut the budgets of schools all over Wisconsin. And what you saw at that period of time, I don't have the statistics in front of me right now, but your state was right next door. And you saw the difference.
Very comparable states, Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Very comparable states and huge difference between a state that actually endorsed and believed in giving workers power and believed in public education and what your state was doing economically versus what happened in Wisconsin. Wisconsin started going down economically. Your state went up economically.
That was the case, and that's still the case in Wisconsin, that teachers aren't unionized.
We are fighting back. Governor Evers has been, you know, a terrific partner. He also, remember, started as the head of public instruction in his, you know, political life, and we're slowly fighting back.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the East and North sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
When we talk about charter schools and, you know, the financing of schools that are, now these can be public charters, right?
Correct.
Tell me about that.
Okay. So Al Shanker and I and our union had a more nuanced view about charters than your listeners may know. Al, who was one of my predecessors at the AFT, Al was one of the people who actually started charter schools, because we've always been trying to figure out ways to ensure that parents and teachers had a voice in trying to help kids learn, and that top-down bureaucracy, I mean, that's why in some ways when Trump was talking about how you get rid of bureaucracy at the Department of Education, my members were like, yeah, get rid of bureaucracy. But it wasn't bureaucracy he was trying to get rid of. He was eviscerating the department, not trying to make it more efficient. But, you know, we want to be out of the yoke of bureaucracy. We want to try to see if something new can work. Charter schools were initially this idea of try something new, and if it works, bring it back to the mainstream. What then happened was that they became a competitor, and they took money in some state laws from other public schools. So the kids that were going to these other public schools that money was taken from, all of a sudden, you know, with money, quote, following the child, all of a sudden, you lost the library at the school. You lost extracurricular activities at the school. So it became something that instead of finding ways to fund charters in a way that didn't do violence to the other kids who stayed in the neighborhood school, they became a competitor to the neighborhood school. And you saw a lot of Sturm und Drang about them.
You worked in a charter school, right?
Not only did I work, I actually started two charters. One okay. which has done extraordinarily well, and one which closed. And the one which has done extraordinarily well, Steve Barr and I started it in 2007. It's in the South Bronx. We have, so this is a long time already, we have basically somewhere between a 95 and 100% graduation rate. It's a unionized charter school and it's doing quite well. The issue about charters are they can't take money away from other students. It can't be viewed as a competitive model. We should have a big public school choice system. We should have a system of lots of different either schools or pathways so that we can help kids have their purpose meet their passion and create all sorts of different possibilities. And a lot of the reasons we don't is because of funding. And so, you know, charters and other public schools, when they were public, you know, have been put in a situation where there's been a lot of tension. On the other hand, what we've seen in places like New Orleans, you notice people don't lift up the charter school system there anymore because it hasn't done well. And all of a sudden, 20 years after Katrina, you're starting to see public schools come back in. Because at the end of the day, and this is probably the most important thing I'll say, the difference between these privatization jaunts and public schooling is that we have a responsibility in public schools to all kids. And we have a responsibility to help all kids. And that's why public schools are so important, because it's for all. It's for broad-based opportunity. And we need the resources to do it.
Shouldn't parents have the choice of being able to find a school that's right for their kid? And
yes, there should be a big public system where people have that right within a public system. The problem is when you have some that's private and some that's public, you're basically taking the money from the public system for privatization, and you're defunding the public schools.
So those are different systems in different states or different?
I think it's a very fluid situation right now, Al, in terms of, you know, in the last few years, there's been a universal voucher system that's operated, for example, in Arizona. And as a result, even though Arizonans voted against it, when there were people in the legislature that wanted to do it. And what has now happened is that so much money has been taken out of public schools, they've closed public schools.
So parents take the money and go to a private school?
Well, there's voucher schools, there's homeschooling, there's charter schools, there's traditional public schools. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of schooling within the United States of America right now, and different states do different things. But what we are seeing is that if you do not actually lift up the amount of money that is going to public schooling, and that's all taxpayer paid, and you take that money away from public schools and you put it into voucher schools that are not regulated or that don't require all kids to go and can close when they want to close or open, you know, they can close one day and all the kids have to go somewhere else. I mean, if you do that, for me, for a parent, you want to send your kid to a voucher school, you want to send your kid to a charter school, you want to send your kid to a religious school, you want to homeschool your kid, that is your right. I am never going to say you should or shouldn't do that. But for me, who represents public schools, which 90% of kids go to, I want them to have enough funding in those schools so that you can have different programs. You could have public school choice. You could have a magnet program. You can have a program for kids in special needs. You can have a program for kids for career tech ed. You can have a program for kids who want to go into the social sciences and have AP Gov classes like the ones I taught. And all of that requires money.
Can we talk about COVID and learning during COVID? And did we take kids out of school too long?
Yes, we took kids out of school too long, and kids should have been in school. We, the AFT, a month after COVID started, we were the first ones to put a plan together that said kids need to be back in schools. The European countries made kids a priority, not bars, not restaurants. And the problem we had is we kept on saying, let's find the money for testing, for ventilation, for the things we know before vaccines that could keep both kids and educators safe. And until Joe Biden, the money wasn't forthcoming. Now, private schools had a bunch of the money for testing, but public schools did not.
For testing for COVID.
Yeah, testing for COVID. Because before vaccines, what we learned, it wasn't the 6 feet or the 3 feet. What we learned was if you had a combination of good ventilation and testing for COVID, you could actually keep people safe. That's what we learned by, I would say, mid-2021. And Raj Shah and I, him from the Rockefeller Foundation, me from the AFT, We actually wrote an op-ed in the USA Today in January 2021. This is the way you can reopen all schools. But, you know, we did not. But again, the issue in America a lot before we started with book bans and erasing history and all that, which is really very much fascistic behavior. The issue in America a lot is we don't fund all schools in a way that we can actually do the things we need to do to help all kids.
Let's talk about the things like Don't Say Gay and a lot of the stuff they've done in Florida. Just talk about, you know, school districts or states that have taken positions that are really destructive.
So now we're getting into the realm of why I wrote the book, which is why would a state basically say to a gay kid or to that kid's teacher who may also be gay, you can't put a picture of you and your husband up in your classroom. We're going to stop you from doing that. Or you can't actually answer a kid's question if the kid, you know, is raising issues about sexuality. Why? Why would anybody do that? Why would anybody try what was going on? This is the otherizing. This is what fascistic behavior starts at. Us versus them. The us is the in crowd. The them is the outside crowd. Then dehumanizing the them. Then denigrating the them. This is the way fascists operate. This is the way authoritarians operate, to the point that the them are viewed as not human anymore. And that's what, when you saw this, in terms of Don't Say Gay, when you saw the erasure of history, when you saw banning books like a book about Anne Frank or Ruby Bridges or Roberto Clemente, what was going on here?
Why would you, let's go through some of those books. Why would you ban Anne Frank? Why would you ban Roberto Clemente? What were the reasons?
Now yeah. You're asking somebody who doesn't believe in banning those books.
Of course.
I think they would ban them for the same reasons that they are against diversity, inclusion, and equity. What do public schools do? What do these books do? They essentially say diversity, understanding each other, understanding the other, not demonizing the other, is a good thing. Living together. Where do we still have any kind of diverse sets of people in public schooling, in colleges, to say that that's wrong, to say that we shouldn't understand what happened to Anne Frank, to say we shouldn't understand what happened to Ruby Bridges or Roberto Clemente, to stop telling stories, which is some of the most important ways that you create trust and knowledge.
I can't, I for the life of me, can't understand why you would prohibit the story of Anne Frank.
Well,
because that is
that
a lesson
district about. That did in Texas, when light was shown on it, quickly changed its ways.
Okay.
Moro Casino. Social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Now, we talked a little bit about career and technical education and launch kids into careers. Are we catching up to Europe? Are we catching up?
No. I wish we were. But this is where you actually need the federal government to make some of this a priority. So you create funding, just like with the CHIPS Act, you create workforce pathways. So the good news is this. It is much less stigmatized today than it was 4 or 5 years ago. The bad news is there's so much that we could be doing and should be doing. And I think that this is some of the answers to actually engagement for young people. Because what I've learned, I'm a big believer in career tech ed. I taught in a career tech ed school when I was an AP Gov teacher. I mean, I'm still on leave from that school, Clara Barton High School in Brooklyn, New York. So I've been a big believer of vocational ed, of SHOP for a very long time. But what we've seen with modern career tech ed is that the things that actually make kids successful in life in this day and age, problem solving, critical thinking, learning to be resilient, relationship building, working
with
teams,
others,
you know, right. being collaborative, being able to communicate, all the kind of what somebody else would say is soft skills, I think are essential skills. You learn all that in a career tech ed pathway. And if you actually have an industry partner where kids are working as interns or apprenticeships, just like, you know, if in the trades, they work on the job as they're learning, same is happening in terms of healthcare, same happens in some of the new emerging work that we're doing in the chips industry. I've seen this happen in Switzerland and in Germany. What you see is that kids are excited about school, they're excited about learning, and they also have a degree or a skill or a credential that they can monetize. So it's a win-win-win situation. 95% of kids who go to these modern career tech ed programs, they're not just schools, graduate from high school on time, and 70% go on to college. So it creates so many choices for kids. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but everyone should have the opportunity to have these kind of credentials available to them and should have it from high school, not from college.
So what do you want people to get from your book?
Two things. One, to love teachers. I spend a lot of time talking about people whose names people would never know. Ryan Richman, Raphael Bohem, people who are doing remarkable jobs in classrooms all the time, but because A, they love kids, but also they know what they're doing to actually make magic happen. This is who teachers are. And this for me was a love letter for them. But number two, it's that this is a really important, what we do in the United States of America to teach kids knowledge, critical thinking, create a welcoming and safe environment. This should be revered, not reviled. And we know that this is now a strategy that's been done by the far right, but it is also a keystone of fascistic behavior to try to undermine knowledge and the pluralism of public school.
What did the Project 2025 people in the education section, what did they write in?
They essentially wanted to end public schooling as we know it.
Exactly. Well, the name of the book is Why Fascists Fear Teachers. It was released last week, and I encourage my listeners to check it out. Thanks so much, Mandy.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
Casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.